very grateful that she accepted our invitation to join us here on Fridays at this hour. It's 12 noon here on the East Coast. And where Mandy is in the UK, it's 5 p.m. And I'm not going to spend more time than to say really happy to have Mandy, who is well known in the non-duality community. And I did ask Mandy, since she said, well, you know, she really doesn't know what to speak about. And I say, well, whatever it is, I'm sure that Spirit has something beautiful to say. I said, why not start with just sharing how you actually came into this understanding, into this revelation of non-duality. And we all have a story how it came to us. I know it came to me way back in 1972. And then after that, there was just more and more revelations that came. Of course, I found the Course in 77. And then, you know, here I am. So without further ado, we're going to turn this mic over to you, Mandy Soak. And this mic is yours, Mandy. Thank you so much for being here.
Mandy, this is Lynn. All you need to do is click on, there's a thing that says hold to talk on the bottom. Click on, there's a little arrow right next to it. Click on that and go down to lock mic on. So, she's on Pal Talk Express. Okay, then I'll let go and let you try to pick up the mic. Speaking, we're not hearing you now. And I'm wondering if you would like me to call you on Skype, if you have that possibility, or a telephone number that I could call you at. I would also call you. So either way, I will let go of the mic. And you have shared. Okay, cool. Okay, I got it. Okay, cool. All right, we're going for it, Mandy, right now.
Hello.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. I'm sorry about all that. I really was pressing the transmitting button and the microphone button, but I don't know why it wasn't working.
Because you needed to talk to me on this, I guess.
Oh, bless you. Should I ring you back and try and get the video, because I could do it on, we could do it on the video if you preferred.
No, the way I have it set up, the video wouldn't show up in the room. So yes, right. I can see your smiley face. So
I'm so sorry. I'm not very good with that computer. I've only just got it, and I'm back on my iPad where I'm much more comfortable.
All is well. So it's just a perfect thing. So I guess, Dove had asked you to talk about your journey. I'd like to be hearing that too. It's pretty fascinating. I've watched a couple of your, Buddha at the Gas Pump and your, what do you call it?
Conscious TV.
Conscious TV. And I just adore you. So, I'm interested in. What's up with you and where'd you come from?
Okay. I think it's always so hard to know how far to start back, because really it was when I was a little girl, I found, like a lot of us, and I'm so grateful for it now, that I was in a very challenging family. You know, I was the soft one and they were quite... not so soft, put it that way. And so I found life very lonely and hard as a child. So I was always looking for something else, and then that just fueled a lifetime of it, really. And then I went from one thing to another. And when I was 16, I got involved with some, I think they probably would have been called evangelistic Christians now. They certainly were very, very strong in their beliefs. And I think I got from them a sense of family, which I didn't have at home. So I stuck with that for a while. And then I found that it was so constricted, their idea of what spiritual obedience is. And I think this thing that a lot of even the so-called more open-minded religions still have going for them, which I find always found rather difficult, is this idea of spiritual obedience, you see, because that always gives a feeling that we're not good enough or we're not doing it right. So I then got very involved with Christian Science and things. But before that, in the 70s, I think when I was probably about 18, I had a motorbike accident, you see. And it was quite extraordinary because, well, a woman was coming out in her car from a parade, some shops, but she just got straight into her car and she didn't look in the mirror or anywhere. She just started the car. And I was driving along very slowly, but yet I could see that there was going to be an impact. And I just knew that I was going to die. And there was this kind of relief because, you see, I knew there was going to be this impact and there was absolutely nothing to stop it whatsoever. My last thought was, well, at least you've got a helmet on, try and land on your head. And then I saw the car and the bike hitting each other, and then I decided to just let go. It was like just an instant decision which changed everything. Just not try and do anything about it, but just this complete surrender and to let go of the handlebars and to absolutely trust. And as I let go of the handlebars to sort of basically meet certain death as the two vehicles crashed into each other, there was this amazing feeling of joy as though something else was just taking care of things. And so then my experience was that I was sort of being pulled upwards, if you like, not by anything. I just was going upwards. Now, as I floated upwards and very high up, I could see all the buildings and the people, the cars and the shops below. But I could see through them all, you see. There they were, and I could see through them all. They were utterly transparent. And then I just started laughing and laughing and laughing because I thought, oh my goodness me, this has all been a complete illusion. The whole thing is just a dream. And I also had some very down-to-earth thoughts as well. Like, I remember thinking, oh, thank God, I don't have to finish with that boyfriend now. And I also thought, oh, I don't have to worry about my overdraft. And it was just, it was really interesting. It was completely unspiritual. But yet,
you don't have to worry about anything. That's awesome. That's how we should think.
Yes, but we apply this word spiritual, which I have to say I've never been very comfortable with, because the word spiritual sort of sets apart one experience from another, you see. And well, quite right, Lynn, what you were just saying is, in fact, everything is spiritual. Either it is or it isn't, but it is, because everything is, isn't it? So as I went up there, wherever it was, I've not really heard it described like this. There wasn't like a vortex. I didn't see any people. There was just this colour, really. It was this wonderful, vibrant green. And then there were things that looked like trees, but I knew they weren't trees. They were like big poles. And in every pole there was a door. And I had this incredible feeling of excitement because I just knew that behind every door there was just something absolutely wonderful. There was no doubt that they all held wonderful, gorgeous surprises. And I couldn't wait to open one. And then I was pushed back. And the next thing I knew, I was on the road and a crowd had gathered round and they were convinced I was dead. The car, which was a mini car, was a complete write-off. And the motorbike was also a write-off. But I didn't even have a bruise on me. I didn't have a stiff neck. I didn't have whiplash. I didn't have a cut, nothing. I never felt so good. And people couldn't believe it. They were shocked more than anything that I was still alive. I mean, I went to hospital and they checked me out and there was nothing wrong at all. And nor did I have any aftershock or anything. And that I'd love to be able to say, oh, yes, right there and there. Then I was enlightened for the rest of my life. But no, not at all. Except that, you know, I have a very different view of what enlightenment is now. And it's just this incredible ordinariness. But anyway, going back to that. So what interests me was I completely lost any fear of death. I didn't have any fear of death forever then. And that was true. And also, I could never really believe anymore that things were the way that they appeared, even though at the same time, I did go back into living very normal life and believing that everything, as at the same time, knowing that it wasn't real, but believing it was real, if you see what I mean. There's just that going back to it. And then I just found that I just got more and more drawn into more what we do call spiritual things. And so I was very interested in Christian Science because they're the one religion that's like a Western religion that sees things in this very non-dual way. So I was very interested in that and I was sort of involved in it for about 20 years. But meanwhile, I was also not just sticking with that because I was very interested in Taoism and Buddhism, and I started training to become a Buddhist teacher, and I left it. I always leave these things at the point that they've got spiritual obedience very high on their list, and sort of dogmas and rules and things like that. Because
okay, can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
Okay, because that really interests me. That's very exciting to hear. Is it because in reality there are no rules and all the rules are something that someone else made up? And so God didn't even make rules. If, you know, whatever created or made what we are, there were no rules made. We can do whatever we want. And so these rules are like an attack on reality. No, that's how I see it. Maybe you have a different thought, but anyway, I'm sorry. Go on.
Oh, beautiful, Lynn. That's beautiful. I mean, it totally echoes exactly what I'm saying, you know. And even in so-called non-dual circles and in any circles, really, when you get people together that want to glorify a God, you see, just by living, we're expressing God. We can't help it, you know. We are light beings playing at this game of being contracted. Actually, you know, because we are pure expansion and the game is up when you realize that's what you are. You know? And every single idea we have of how things should be, really, as soon as there's a should in it, you know, it's completely erroneous, really, because God is an expanse. I mean, I love the word God. I have no problem with God. I love that word God. It is, you know, in other countries, it sometimes just means pure good. You know, it's translated as pure good. It's just pure goodness. And so there can't be any contraction in it. We can't contract it down into what we think is right and what we think is wrong. The love comes from just that pure allowing every moment to be as it is. But even that, you see, that's not quite true, because we can't be allowing anything. There's nothing that's allowed or not allowed. It just is. Every single moment is just to show us that there is no absence.
Accept it.
I agree with you, and I think it's also even more subtle than that, you see, because this is where words get almost meaningless, don't they? Because we say accept, but then you see, whenever you have a word like that, positive as it sounds, there's always the other side of it, like not accepting it, isn't it? This is the trouble. It's a kind of...
I see that, yes.
Yeah, I think and this, there's a great, you've probably seen him speak. There's a wonderful American speaker called Matt Carr, and I love the way he describes things as well. And, you know, he's fabulous.
He's adorable. Yeah, yes. We've listened to him quite a bit. So.
Oh, yes. Isn't he? And, you know, I love what he says about sort of, you know, dropping this spiritual obedience thing, because I mean, it sort of interferes with the absolute expansiveness of what we are, because also it's like, if you view things as either spiritual or not spiritual, you really can miss the true, if you like, spirituality of everybody. Because, for instance, I know my sister wouldn't be listening to this in a million years, so it's safe to say this, because she just thinks that all this is sort of very strange, really, and that's to put it kindly. So I know she won't be listening, but I used to have opinions about my family, as we often do, you know, that especially if they're not interested in this sort of thing, and that's a real trap, because, you know, you can go along thinking, oh, I'm superior to them because I see this. I know that I'm not a person, but they still think they are. You know what I mean? And that's what the family's there for, to kind of pull you up on these things, really, even though they don't know you're doing it.
Yeah, perfect. Because yes, we are the same thing. And so to even imagine that, you know, I have something they don't have, you know, it's not possible. I love
it. Exactly. Oh, I wish I could give you a big hug. It's just absolutely right. Anyway, recently I was talking to my sister. I mean, the things, you see, people think that another thing is that if you were really to really believe that you were superior, then you would be in hell, wouldn't you? Because you wouldn't be able to ever talk to anybody about when things come up for you, because you're so superior. You're not expected to have feelings like sadness or fear or anything like that. But the whole point about this is that we are all that one being that shares absolutely everything. I mean, we're here to have this human experience. We can't be denying it by imagining ourselves in some mythical form of enlightenment. This idea of enlightenment, where one is abiding 100% in this peaceful blissness, I mean, it goes against real truth. It goes against reality. It can't be. Even Ramana Maharshi said, be vigilant. You know, he meant be vigilant. You know, that's what he meant. Because, sorry, what were you going to say?
Well, it's because, yes, I see this exactly. Because that's what we're here for, is to have this experience. So why judge one experience as more joyful or better than another? You know, grief is a part of the joy of being alive in the world and the experience. Otherwise, why would we be here? Why would I be here? Why would I be thinking these thoughts? They're for me.
Exactly, exactly. And it's all a wonderful expression. And like you say, when you drop the idea of, well, this is a good thing or this is a bad thing. So if I'm feeling sad, that's a bad thing. If I'm feeling happy, that's a good thing. I mean, that completely puts you back into smallness, into contraction, because you're not embracing it all. Another thing Matt says, which I like very much, and it's true, he says that whenever you're feeling emotions that are sort of like sadness or any or anger or things like that, they're actually on their way out. You're actually stuff is coming out, you know, it's coming out of you, it's leaving you, it's not there to stay. You don't have to think, oh, this is how it's going to be now, or this is good or this is bad. It's just all good, you know. It's just all these judgments. But anyway, I was so one day after a particularly bad news item, you know, some fear from way back from something from childhood really came up for me, and I talked to my sister about it, and she was very pragmatic and very down to earth, and she was telling me her view of this particular news item. And you know, it was so wonderful, it was so refreshing. And I realized that from her point of view, although she might not talk about God or spirituality or anything like that, but nevertheless her view of goodness always outshining was absolutely amazing. And I realized that I'd done her such a big disservice all these years by ever separating people out with, well, this person's spiritual and that person's not spiritual. And I think that's why I've got such a thing about it. But you know, I don't see any of it as spiritual. I see that if you are making some soup and all you're doing is thinking about the soup, then that's spiritual, because you are present with the soup. You know, soup making's happening and that's it. So that's the kind of thing that I suppose I talk about with people, that complete down to earthness. Whatever your belief is, that everything just happens and unfolds the way it should. And when that happens, I mean, when things happen to me that I think I said this last time actually, you know, if I drop things or cream or sugar goes all over the place or whatever, there's some mess to clear up just before I'm about to go out, I literally just wait. I wait in complete trust for the idea of what to do about it, and it always comes. And that's what I'm really grateful for, that whatever this journey's done, it's given me such a deep trust, you know. And when I had that accident, you see, there was just this absolute love feeling. I think I forgot to mention that because I told you what had happened. But you see, the feeling of love was extraordinary. I mean, you could never ever put that into words. It was so massive. And I just know that is there for everybody when they, you know, when they pass, kind of thing. It's just really going into the expansion of more of what you are. It's just going back to that. Yes, because we are living in this contraction. But every time we see that, that's where we can laugh about it, because we are. And this is another thing. I make no excuse for sometimes quoting Matt, because I just love how he puts things. But, you know, this thing I was saying earlier, that light beings playing at being contracted beings. I mean, when you realize that you are playing that game of contraction, the minute you realize that in every moment or many moments through the day, then you're back into expansion again. That's all it is. It's just constantly noticing it. And that's where I love the Course in Miracles, because it's such a great place to start, reside, finish and start again.
Me too. That's awesome. Because it is. It's like there's... You go, to me, it's a spiral. I just see it, you know, it may be that I'm in exactly seeming like the same place I was a year ago or 5 years ago, but I actually have actually moved inward more toward the truth of what I am, even though
again, it may be seem like I'm doing the same things over and over, or my life is repeating itself in some way, but, or doing the course lessons over and over. Every single time, it's a deeper, deeper, deeper knowing. So I love that, how you're working. So we are of a kind. I love that. We are the same. Yay.
Yeah. I like that spiral thing. That's absolutely true, you know, because it's like the Course in Miracles. I mean, like loads of people, I got that book years and years ago, and then you do a little bit and you drop it, and then you come back to it, and because you're coming at it from a different place. I mean, that's what I think so wonderful about it, because it's such deep, it resonates, it's such deep truth that whenever you come back to it, you come back to it at a more refined level of getting it, if you like. You know, it just goes in even deeper, and you were supposed to leave it all that time. You were supposed to come back to it just exactly when you came back to it. And it doesn't matter if you leave it again, and you'll pick it up again exactly when you're supposed to come back to it. It's wonderful, you know. The other thing I was just going to share about was Ho'oponopono, you see, because some people that know me for talking about non-duality used to write to me and say, well, why are you now talking about Ho'oponopono? You see, this is the mindset of people who don't understand the very ordinariness of freedom. It's just ordinary. Anything, you can do anything, you know. There's not, oh, we can't, it's not, oh, we can't touch that anymore because we're so non-dual.
Oh, that's so funny, because I do Ho'oponopono too. I do it all the time.
Yeah.
Anything upsets, a little tiny upset comes up to me, I Ho'oponopono, because it works. It's like instant. Instant.
You know, I think it is the most incredibly instant form of healing. I mean, just the other day, I've got some neighbors, and anyway, they've got some problems and a lot of crying and upset and stuff like that going on. And you know, just Ho'oponopono, of course, which is where I'm sure everybody knows who's listening to this, but just in case, with Ho'oponopono, which means to make right right, which is a Hawaiian system of healing, but it used to be used mainly as a sort of conflict resolution, didn't it? You know, like mediation in groups and families and in communities. And then Dr. Hugh Len and Mauna, his teacher, taught a method where we could use this for ourselves, and it didn't have to be dependent on working with other people in groups to do it. And it's really it's those four phrases, as you know, which said whichever way round you want. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. And I think it fits beautifully into non-duality, because when you say I'm sorry, it's not about some kind of punishment, self-punishment. It's just reminding yourself that you have taken on the perception that somebody said. So somebody's come to you with a story and said, oh, this is terrible, and my husband's left me, I've got no money, this has happened, and I've got appendicitis, and I don't know, they could give you a whole catalogue of disasters. But if you're taking that on board, you're believing that picture. And anyway, that picture can't be outside of you, since you are everything and contain everything. So when somebody brings to you a picture that appears negative, if you're starting to think, oh, you poor thing, that means you're believing it. You can certainly empathize with the person, because it would seem very harsh if you didn't. But privately, you're constantly not buying the story by saying I'm sorry. And if you have bought in the story, you might add, please forgive me. Although, you know, it's really just to say thank you. I think the thank you is important. I'm sorry, please forgive me. thank you, I love you. And the thank you is saying thank you for reminding myself to not believe this story. And I love myself, which includes the aspect which is them. I love myself as them, as me, for my own perfection, and I know that I'm perfect. So when the somebody the other day came and said she was losing a home and she was very upset, and there was a house she might get, but she doesn't know she's going to get it, and she really needs that house because the rent is low. And I just, if I had taken on board or shared with her the thought, well, she might not get it, oh dear, what's she going to do? Then I'm just making double that story. Just like when you put, then if you've got a mirror on the wall, and if you've got clutter in front of the mirror, you've now got double the clutter because the mirror is reflecting the clutter as well.
It's like what the Course of Miracles calls joining your brother in his dark dream. And Right. Isn't that just perfect? That's exactly what you do when you do that. So doing Ho'oponopono is releasing your brother from your thought of his dream.
From your thought, yeah. And it works so quickly, doesn't it? I mean, I had this lady send a text to me within 10 minutes, and she was distraught, you know. And she sent a text saying, oh, I'm much calmer now. My thoughts have slowed down. I feel more confident. And, I mean, I just see it all the time. I'm sure you do. Every single time somebody presents you with a story, or you present yourself with a story, but you use the Ho'oponopono, it's just amazing. And it's pure non-duality, because it's not seeing anything outside of you, you know. You're reminding yourself that you are this. You are your sister and your brother. You are it. And it's just beautiful. And so I really do teach that, because you see, as you know, I might share that. I don't even like to use the word teaching, because I learn it and then I'm sharing it, aren't I? So I'm sharing it with people who come on retreats or whatever, and then they think it's wonderful, and then I know what happens. That they kind of, it becomes a saying, and they sort of plateau a little bit. So they don't write and tell me this, but what I do is I kind of give it about 6 weeks after the retreat, and then I email them all, and then I just sort of like write a very gentle, loving reminder of the fact that you are working always on your feelings about the situation. And then they all write back and say, oh yes, I needed that reminder, and now it's really working for me. So like the Course in Miracles, and like everything we're doing, and Ho'oponopono, there's kind of levels of it going in deeper and deeper and deeper, isn't it?
You know? Yes. And you know what's so funny with it though, for me, and I don't know if you have this situation, but I have a tendency to be resistant to that. And so, there's a lot of times I just am like, okay, fine, I will Ho'oponopono because I'm not feeling at peace, and I will do it whether I mean it or not, and I will do it until I mean it. It's like, I have to do it to myself to let go enough to be able to be open to let go and let and free my brother from this trap that I've put him into. So I love it. The practice is wonderful, and I'm thrilled to hear someone else that uses it, because, you know, that's, I don't hear Rupert Spira is saying, I will Ho'oponopono this or Tony Carson or anyway, Tony Carson's saying that, but I love it.
You see, this idea that, I mean, I know those guys really well, because I used to run something called Non-Duality North, where I used to invite them and other teachers to come and speak about non-duality. Years ago I did this, and because they stayed with me, I got to know them, and they're great. But they, you know, I find that you know, often teachers that teach this nihilistic, well, Rupert doesn't so much, Tony does, you know, this sort of nihilistic way of, well, there's nothing matters, there's nobody there. The point is that we are here to have the experience of this. So, you know, you need to see a table. There must be a table. You have to have a table so that you can see the emptiness of the table. In other words, we need all these experiences just to see the God in them, to see God in them. We need the experience to see the nothingness of them, kind of thing. So it's a paradox. We do need both things. We need, you know, and this is where the Ho'oponopono works really well, because on the one hand, you need to believe that there are people out there so that you can see the, you know, and that there are, you need to believe there are suffering people out there so that you can see the absence of the suffering. That, because the Ho'oponopono really does teach you the absence of the suffering. It's your picture always, isn't it, Lynn? It's your picture and your feeling about that picture.
Exactly. My mind. It's only my mind. Absolutely.
That's it. When we drop that suffering picture, there's just no suffering there. And so we need both. We can't just say there's no. I mean, people used to write to me, having been to teachers like that, and they were very depressed because it traps people. You see, because they get trapped into, and I believe me, I know what I'm talking about, because I went through this trap so much, and it's an ego trap. It's the trap that, well, I resonate with that there's nobody there and there's nothing that you can do. I really understand it, which of course you don't, but you think you do.
Intellectually, conceptually you do, but not really.
That's it, because you're not experiencing that. And every time you say, I understand, it's the biggest block you've got to really experiencing or embodying the truth, you know. Anyway, so and then people would say that they'd write to me, and there's another teacher they'd write to, you know, and say how depressed they were. And I thought, well, I'm not surprising, because what you're doing is you're denying your right to be alive. And they'd write things and say, well, I used to be this, or I used to be a life coach, I remember somebody saying. And what's the point of being a life coach now, since there's no point making any goals? And I thought, oh, Jesus, have you got this wrong?
Completely the opposite, really, of what this is here for. This is really to feel the experience, to appreciate the experience, and to, for me, and this is just my personal thing, is to have relationships with people during this experience, and to see myself in them, to see how they are reflecting right back to me all the things that I kept secret in my own mind about who I am. So, you know, to me, it's essential to be a part of, to celebrate it, to enjoy it, to have fun with it, and to relate with people in a conscious way, because this is what brings the joy to it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's funny in a way, because really the freedom is in going full circle. I mean, first of all, if you like, before you're aware of what you are, you're just having experiences and you get pulled into them, and this is what can cause the suffering, because you really believe them and that's all you believe. And then we come out of it and we do a lot of seeking and a lot of soul searching, and we hear a lot of things to be spiritually obedient for, and what's good behavior and what's bad behavior and what's right and everything like that. And then you realize that whatever it is all right, and because when you know what you are, you are purely good. So when you know, you can go back to watching television or you going talking about window cleaning, or I don't know, you can talk about anything, because it never escapes you that love and light is there as you, in everybody, reflected back to you. And whatever's going on is all right. And anyway, the tendency when you know thyself, know yourself, is the tendency is only to do good. There's no way that one has to beat oneself up or think, oh, I said not the right thing there or anything like that. You
can't do it wrong.
You can't do it wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the freedom. It doesn't matter what I do.
I can't do it wrong. And it doesn't matter. You know, my husband had a dream. My husband is an agnostic or atheist, but he dreams about Jesus and gives, Jesus always gives him a message for me in his dream.
Wow. Wow.
So he had a dream about Jesus and he was so mad because Jesus keeps coming in his dreams. He really gets angry about it. And he says, and he sees Jesus in his dream and he just goes up and he just punches him so hard that Jesus just fell right over. But then he popped right back up like a weeble, you know, and my husband kept punching him and he kept, and every time he'd come up, he'd be laughing. And so finally my husband just gave up. He just said, okay, you know, I can't knock you down. I can't knock you out. All I can make you do is laugh. Okay, what do you want? And then, you know, he and Jesus went for a little walk in the woods and Jesus gave him a message. And I mean, that's what we are. We can be punching Jesus right in the face. That's okay. He's just going to pop right up and smile and laugh. And that's the way it is with all of us. You can kill me. I'm this body. I'm still here. You know, nothing you do can harm me or you because we are this thing that we are. So, it's funny stuff.
Oh, I think that's so interesting what you're saying. And it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, we have to use words. So, yeah, of course we have a word for somebody who says they don't believe in God, like, or I don't know, like atheist or agnostic. But those people are usually so full of such compassion and such goodness, and they don't realize that they are expressing exactly that. It's really funny.
Oh. Absolutely. Well, you can deny it all you want. It's still there. You can deny the truth all you want. It's still the truth. So, yeah. You can't hurt the truth.
I think the greatest thing that I'm most grateful for is just kind of like, you know, sort of just that, I don't know really how to say it, because if I say it, it sounds wrong. But what I mean is sort of the dropping of the egocentricity that falls away when you see that everybody is the same because they are that light, that to have any egocentricity about it. Like, for instance, you know, one point, if I was very quiet and people would suddenly fall into silence around me, this would be a cause for ego. There'd be a little part of me thinking, oh, I can do that. I can make people so peaceful. You know, and then I look back at that and think, oh, you idiot. But I don't even think that, you know, it's just like that's where you were then. That's, you know, and now that, I don't care whether people are quiet or noisy. It's nothing to do with me anyway. You know, it's just nothing. There's nothing to do with a me. It couldn't possibly be. And that's lovely, because when you give yourself, when you let go of all this stuff, it's like you almost give yourself permission to just kind of just be and not be a person with a certain belief about them. That's really nice and light, you know.
Yeah. Yes, you're off the hook. You know, you can just,
you're off the hook.
Relax and just be. And that's what freedom that is.
It is. And that's why I mean that you go full circle, because like something might come up for you, like you suddenly got a situation with a person that seems a bit difficult or something's challenging, and you can just go and, you know, either talk to somebody about it or whatever. There's no need to sort of like keep any persona. I mean, you see, what I'm really interested in is banishing this idea of this enlightened state, because people just like, you know, fairy tales, people
yes.
have this misguided idea of what enlightenment is, and they think it's an extraordinary, blissful, elevated state, and that couldn't be further from the truth. It's just extraordinary ordinariness, really. It's just ordinariness. It's the joy of the ordinary, isn't it? You know,
it is. And there's no need. What would you need anything else for? You know, if you know, I'm seeing myself that, you know, things I used to have such a
I want to say active mind, but just really inventive and always wanting to do something and always wanting to be entertained and, it's too quiet, I need to do something or, look something up on the computer or, go get something to eat or, I had all these thoughts or these promptings to somehow or the other try to improve the moment. Wouldn't this moment be much better if I was eating ice cream? Wouldn't I be happier if I, just trying to make everything better? When reality is, it's just all wonderful. Mm. It all is wonderful. It's beautiful.
It is. I mean, absolutely. I agree with you totally. Is to have that tendency to make the moment better. And I started to realize that I used to have things to look forward to. And then I started to get it that, well, when you look forward to something, first of all, you are right in this moment now, thinking about that moment, but you are before the moment. And then that moment you've been waiting for happens, and it is just a moment, and then you're after the moment. And so I started to, that was quite a long time ago.
You never catch up.
yeah, exactly. You never catch up. But the other thing was, I had it really bad, Lynn, about needing people to think of me as a certain way. It was because I was so desperate to be an angel that I wanted people to think I was an angel, and even if I hadn't got there yet.
So, oh, sure, because you want to also give people hope and give them the idea, oh, that can happen to me too. If it happened to her, it could happen to me too. And really, it can, but I'm no different. You're no different. That's what we should be saying to people. We're the same thing.
We're the same thing, and we are the angel anyway. We are the angel, but angels don't look the way you think they look. Angels don't always like say the right thing and doing good things. They're not always out there doing good works, and they're not always doing this. They can be just sitting at home watching the telly. They can be doing this. They can be doing that. An angel is, just is, whatever you are, and there's no... And when you drop all that stuff, that is the freedom you see, isn't it? When you just drop all that ego to the point where, well, I don't care what anybody thinks about me, because that's their stuff and their freedom to do so,
Exactly. But it's their entertainment.
Yes, but it's their invitation, their entertainment, it's their right, and it means nothing anyway. So, but I think that when we talk about enlightenment, it just is so not lofty. It's so the opposite of it's just a shame that a term gets a groove in it, doesn't it? A term of description, and it gets like a groove, and it gets so solid in people's mind. They can't get out of that groove, But that's all I'm interested in, is people drop that idea. And I see it when I do groups, when they can just drop the idea that they're supposed to get to a state that they will attain and abide in for every single moment of the rest of their life. That when they can drop that, it's like they give themselves permission to not be going after it. And right there is that enlightenment there.
Yeah, it's done. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. When you just drop that, whoa, someday I'll get to that, that's what I used to think with the Course in Miracles, when I accept the atonement for myself. Oh, well, it's now. So let's just do it and be where we are and love each other for what we are. That's the thing.
Exactly. Oh, isn't it great? I mean, it's great because I don't mean that in a Pollyanna way. I mean, it's great even when it's not great, because it is great. That's the point. It's we drop these ideas, don't we, of what's good or bad. We drop the description because everything is absolutely perfect in this moment. And that is something that gets repeated all the time, but it is true. And that's why some things do get repeated all the time, because you can't get away from that, really. So there's the joy in it, isn't it?
That's right. And so the things that get repeated, I noticed that, once I figured out or not, just learned what it is that I needed to learn from the situation, then I never have a problem with anything again. It's like they all, it's all one mindset.
Yes.
So if you change the mindset, it changes everything. It's like looking from a different direction, or standing on top of a hill looking at all the things that you once thought were like just tearing you apart, and just realizing, oh, look at all that. Interesting. it does put a distance between yourself, that the experience of being caught up into something that is not real. It just changes that completely.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, but I'm going to have to go now, and I just want to thank you and everybody for giving me the time. It's just absolute privilege. Thank you so much. Lovely to talk to you.
Yes, wonderful to talk to you too. And you know, I'm glad that you were not, you know, saying, oh no, I, you know, don't talk and I'll do all the talking. Because I really wanted to have a conversation with you, and I have this opportunity. So it's a wonderful, I'm just joyful to know you, and I hope that you're here every week. And if you want to do this Skype thing, I find it much, much nicer, just because we can talk like normal people. And it's not like you're giving us a lecture or a story. You know, if you don't mind that, I'm thrilled to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to do it some more. I can't do it every week, unfortunately, because I'm especially on Fridays, I'm sometimes running meetings and things like that. I'd love to do it again. Definitely a few times, and also Skype is definitely the way for me. I just can't handle anything else but Skype. Skype's the only thing I can do.
Well, that's wonderful, because I'm joyful. I'm very happy to do it. So just, you know, let me know, and we'll work on, you know, figuring out when you can be available. I just would love to have a lot of different people who have that viewpoint, because it, you know, people do hear that and think, oh, I can do that too, you know.
Yeah. That's good. Oh, bless you. Thank you so much. So much love to you. And bye-bye for now.
Thank you so much, Mandy. And God bless you, and have a wonderful rest of the evening. And we will talk to you the next time.
Thank you, Lynn, so much. God bless you, too.
Hugs and kisses to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.